Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Greg Hutchins.
Hey, Greg. You know, we've been talking almost every week for, quite a while. I'm thinking years. Many years. Seems like.
Probably too long, but it's been fun.
It's been fun.
I've learned a lot.
But I wanted to get you on the show because you've been writing and editing a lot about risk and risk management. You're well-versed in the quality world. In some of the future episodes, I'm sure we're going to talk about how reliability and risk interact and intervene and everything else. But I also, it's good timing. Just yesterday, I got this question, and it was from somebody trying to, I'm summarizing because it was a back and forth discussion on LinkedIn a little bit, but the idea was is that they're a reliability engineer and they're in the organization and they know they need to upgrade their program, how they go about doing it. And it was basically getting the team to do design for reliability. And the crux of it was is that she could see how important it was for the organization and the risk they were taking, and I'm using that word deliberately with you, of not paying attention to customer satisfaction on reliability and the amount of failures they had and how poor their customer service was. And kind of that whole program wasn't really serving their customers from the design all the way through. And what came across, though, was that she was frustrated with trying how to communicate that to the rest of the organization so they would get it. And part of this is just the risk the organization that she's identifying is taking. It didn't sound like they had an enterprise risk management program in place or anything like that. So I think it's more of a change management type of thing when you're a subordinate in an organization trying to implement a change, which is never easy to do, in my opinion. But you know, what's your take on that? How would you respond to that? I'm going to compare it to what I told her.
Oh, boy. I'll share with you a couple of lessons learned. And these are hard lessons learned from an Uber geek.
not the Uber car driver guy, are you?
No. Okay. And more ways than one, I felt like I've been unsuccessful. It comes down to changing hearts and minds. And even with a VP about 2 weeks ago, I had this challenge. So let me sort of state the problem. A large organization, he's a VP. He has been tasked to essentially take their, you know, programmatic management program, about $1 billion worth of projects and programs, and change the way they manage them. Okay. So it's a big deal.
Right.
And the person I was talking to is their mid-40s. He's hypoed, meaning he's a high potential employee. You know, he's been identified as somebody who's going to move up quickly. But the big challenge for him has been socializing this idea in the organization. Now, most geeks think if it's logical, it's scientific, it's engineering, there's data to support that, meaning evidence-based data, that the organization or the people or the customer will automatically.
Well, I always would add a couple of formulas in there. That's just icing on the cake there.
You know, oh, you bet.
Derive a couple of equations and you're in.
Oh, absolutely, Fred. But the question is, will the organization or the folks who we're trying to have them buy into the idea, and it's really our sell. Socialization is another way of saying having people, having you sell the idea and having them adopt it, at least believe in it, and potentially adapt new behaviors. And it's hard. It's hugely hard.
Well, we're hired essentially, and I'm thinking the engineer level of it is we're hired to do the equations, to do the calculations, to run out the cost-benefit analysis, to and here she's being motivated by, you know, if we don't change this, we're we're going to lose in the market. Our customers are going to abandon us. Our products are failing more than they should, which is why is nobody else see this? And socialization, though, makes it sound like she should have started years ago with, you know, creating champions and getting lines of communication to various people that had influence across the organization, those kind of things. But what can she do now? Right?
Basically, I've had two conversations like this in the last month. So let me sort of provide a little context. More organizations want to manage by evidence-based decision-making. We call it risk-based decision-making. Mm-hmm. They want to be a little bit more methodical. They want to follow a process, a framework. And part of that is the people challenge. People now are simply scared. And it takes a lot more time to start socializing. So I think the first step is getting your bosses on board. Do they understand what you're trying to do? Do they understand why you're trying to do it? And then most importantly, what's the benefit? Right. If you do what you say you're going to do, how will they basically measure that in terms of a KPI, key performance indicator, mm-hmm, or metric?
Well, that's, you know, I found that's obvious is, you know, mm-hmm, here's the organization saying we want to increase profitability or whatever. And we walk in and say, well, if we actually make our products reliable, we reduce the warranty, ergo more profit. And that almost never works. I mean, there's a difference between what people with the organization, with the cohort basically says, this is what we are focused on. But you've done this. You've gone around the room of all the key stakeholders and you think you got them all on board, but when they get in a room together, it doesn't happen. And I think there's this, there's not wanting to confront confrontation, you know, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's a good idea, but they're not willing to say, well, we have other priorities. And there's other things going on at different levels. And then the other part is that the motivation for each person I've always found is that it's very different person to person. So if I walk in and say, hey, we want to increase profitability because it's good for the organization and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh, uh-huh. One person might go, yep, that makes sense. I get that. And everybody else goes, well, how do I get promoted out of that? How do I take credit for that? How do I, you know, it's, you know, there's people have so many different motivations. And I found that the change management part is, yeah, you got to do diligence and get the engineering right and the cost benefit right and line up with what the overt priorities are. I really feel you can't ignore the individual's motivations, which could be all over the map.
It takes a certain amount of, it's interesting. I've got a lot of pedigrees and certifications in terms of engineering. In terms of the hearts and minds, that requires a new level of skill and maturity. And I've seen that many years ago. A friend of mine, a significant other, had this ability to look at a group of people, understand their needs at a very deep level, and almost chameleon-esque, mm-hmm, change her colors and change her persuasion to the different person. Now, externally, you could see that as a form of manipulation. Internally, she was beloved, and she was basically slotted to be an EVP of a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah. Well, part of that is, for some people, it's natural. I swear it is. And some people, it's learned skill. Is what's the old adage? My mom used to tell me this. It's like, you know, you have two ears for a reason. You know, so I bet you she would go in to a group and she would probably ask an open-ended question or create space for the other person to talk and then pick up on what was driving them or what they were interested in, whatever. And then it was essentially, tell me more. People love talking about themselves when they have an audience, but it gives you tons of information about, are they looking for the office, you know, a new chair or the corner office, or are they looking for a longer vacation period? Or are they, I mean, what's their motivations? whatever it could be. But by listening, you can find those out. And I bet you, your significant other was good at that.
She had a couple of characteristics, and I learned a lot. One was one trial learning. She made mistakes. She didn't repeat them. Mm-hmm. Second is she was hugely likable. Three, she would socialize, not in a group. She would do that in a group, but more importantly, she would do that individually. Mm-hmm. In the office, outside of the office, and build rapport, build connection, build engagement, and build what she would call gravitas, right?
Well, yeah, I worked for a woman like that when I was at HP. She would swing, you know, she knew I was in the office early, mostly because I wanted to avoid commute, you know, delays. And so once a week or so, she'd be in the office early and she'd swing by and say, and she wasn't, you know, what are you working on? Are you working on what I want you to work on? Kind of a attitude or voice. She goes, so what's up? What you working on? You know, what's new? And I learned very, very quickly that if I was vulnerable enough and willing enough, and she always made it safe to do so, I said, you know, I'm really struggling with X, Y, Z. And she would never solve the problem for me. Never. But what she did was even better. She allowed me to see a way to solve it. She would reframe the problem or say, have you looked at it this way? Or have you checked this out? Or how about this idea? You know, have you thought about X? You know, have you looked at it that way? She would just help me, you know, oh, there's the path. Okay, now I can get out of the forest. And so I'd look forward to any time I had a one-to-one, you know, engagement on the hallway, by the coffee pot, you know, anytime. Until one day she came by my desk and said, are you running this group? And it was like 50 engineers that were basically internal consultants to HP. And we worked on electronics systems and future stuff and lots of accelerated testing and all kinds of weird stuff we worked on. And mm-hmm. she said, now, I just want to check. Am I running this group or are you running this group? And I'm like, what? And because she said, over half of the projects in this team, you brought in. And you didn't ask me about any of them. And I said, is that bad? She goes, no, that's perfectly fine. But it was her way of saying, good job. You're solving problems now. You've seen, you know, how to do these things and everything else. And she continued to swing by. And I was a first level engineer. You know, and in this big group and all this stuff. But it was her deft touch at mentoring that brought me along. Now, the opposite side is, I mean, I recognize that she would help if I asked her questions. And that was so powerful. I think part of that socialization part is finding those people that are interested in your career and are willing to help you because they make great champions. You know, it really depends though. If your boss is not there to help you, I don't know. I really don't like those circumstances.
Going back to the question, what's the first step? Part of it is obviously change management. The person who's got the great idea needs to have what I would call believability. You know, as you move up the organization, you might call believability gravitas, but it's basically the asset, the personal asset that you have in terms of having other people recognize you as a peer, as an expert, as somebody who does things, you know, who takes the initiative.
You hear a phrase like, she knows her stuff.
Exactly.
You know, that's, it's a compliment and it's also that, yeah, you're solid. You know what you're talking about.
Yeah. You're a team player. You're on the bus and you're here to add value.
Yeah.
And, you know, the organization might say you're a high potential employee. Mm-hmm. And those people tend to make things happen. And when you, Fred, say something in reliability, people believe you. Because you have that stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. There was a movie called The Right Stuff, right?
Right.
You know, a bunch of astronauts, right, going to space, and they had the right stuff. And an organization, you've got right stuff. And when you do that socialization, people automatically listen and they gravitate to you and to your ideas. So I think the first step is to explain the value proposition that you're offering.
Right.
In terms of the reliability group, your idea for a new product, whatever it is. Yeah, because without that, it's hard to move forwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think once you get, and some of it is that if you've done the analysis and you've got the charts and graphs, it's boil it down to as simple, clear as message as you can get. Here's where we are. Here's where we think we want to be. You know, here's what Joe, CEO, says. This is where we want to be, or whoever is a significant person in the organization. I would
absolutely. Right?
And it may not be the CEO. Who do other people listen to? And if she's on board, then and you're able to coattail essentially their gravitas, you enhance your own. But I think there's techniques for doing that and ways of building that credibility. Part of it is consistently doing a good job and adding value. It's a great way to go about doing it. But part of it is that here's the, like you said, the why. This is why this is important. This is how it impacts us. This is the trajectory I see. And here's the evidence. You can follow it. But then you know you've got it when they say, well, what do we do about this? Right. And
yes.
then you're into, all right, now here's some options, here's some plans, here's ways to go about it. You know, and then you're off and running. Then the real trouble starts, is because then you're actually making changes.
So, yeah. And I would add one thing to this. When you're socializing, the person you're talking to has to understand the problem and understand the personal win. What's in it for me? What's the wiffle?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't make that transition, I mean, you know, it's great that, you know, you're going to help the company make money. Okay, that's terrific. But if you can shorten, you know, lower the cost, shorten the schedule, do something that helps the other person visibly.
Right. And it's different, like I said earlier, it's different for different people. Somebody that says, oh, I'm tied to the bonus and, oh, this will help improve my bonus. That's great. They might never say that in a group, but they'll support the idea. Right? Whereas an engineer that really loves working on the new project and the new technology, whatever, and really doesn't like going back and solving field problems from three generations ago, as well, you know, if we get this design for reliability stuff done, you won't get called out so often to go fix prior problems. There just won't be as many problems, you know? And if they see that, then, oh, okay, I get to do what I want to do then in the lab versus failure analysis stuff. And so on. It varies by person, but it's exactly right. I think WIFM is recognizing what's in it for them. and you know, part of it is also, you got to be pretty humble. If somebody really wants to take credit for it and it's pivotal to make this work for you, let them take credit for it. It is okay.
100% of the time, 100% of the time. If you're the facilitator, team lead, project lead, if you can have other people take the credit,
mm-hmm,
and recognize that, that's fine, because the group wins always.
Yep. Yep. And it doesn't go unnoticed. This has been my experience. Even though you're not taking the award at the top of the stage, you know, one or two of your team members that were the face of the program, they get the accolades. It's not unnoticed who made it happen. I believe that. And it may take a while, yet you'll get bigger and better challenges going forward. That's a downside, I think. There's the risk part of this. If you do a good job with change management, you get to do it more often.
With bigger risks, meaning higher consequences and lower likelihood sometimes. But anyway, that's part of the game.
Yeah, it certainly is. All right, cool. It was pretty much in line with what I had told her, Greg. It was so yeah, I think we pretty much in sync on this. I guess we've had similar experiences over the years.
And I've tried everything from, throwing on my knee pads to...
I haven't gone that far.
necessary. But anyway, yeah, it's been fun.
All right. Well, if you're listening to this and going, I've got some of these challenges and this is working or not working, let us know. Join the conversation. Let us know what's working for you or what's the roadblock you got in front of you right now. It might make a great future podcast for us. A big part of what we do in the work we do involves other people. And so this change management and the skills that we outlined briefly in this episode certainly apply. So if you've got a question for us or a topic like that, you can find you can join the conversation. I'm stumbling a little bit. You can join the conversation over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you can find a widget that allows you to record a voice message to us, a voicemail to us. And I think you get 90 seconds, which is actually a pretty good sized chunk of time to ask a question. Or you can leave us a written comment there. Or you can find Greg and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or via our About pages on Ascendo. Lots of ways for you to join the conversation. So, Greg, you got any big change management projects coming up today?
Yeah, everything from fixing up my house to figuring out how to get my daughter to do some stuff.
Good luck with that one.
The only other thing I'd like to add is, the conversations between Fred and me are really extended conversations. I failed more times, many more times than I've succeeded. And whatever you want to bring up, please share them with Fred. Please share them with me. Hey, it's a great opportunity for me to learn.
All right. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.